Hello, and welcome to the new and improved How We Saw It podcast. I'm your host, Aaron, and with me is longtime friend, first-time producer, and the closest damn thing I have to a brother. Say hi, Mike.
Hello, everyone.
All right, so let's get the business out of the way. If you dig what we're doing, and we of course hope that you do, please leave us a review, and then come over to our Facebook group and hang out. That's where you'll find all of our episode info. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can follow the show at How We Saw It Pod. If you want to follow me, you can follow me at athomas1978. And Mike, if the people wanted to follow you, where would they go?
At medic5x5 on Twitter.
All right, so you might be saying to yourself, what's new? Well, the format is getting switched up a bit. With Mike moving to an area that has very little broadband, let's say, it's become kind of impossible to properly record one of these. So we have to keep Mike in the background as much as possible to prevent corruption of the audio files, because there's nothing more irritating than having to record the same episode twice. We're also switching up the theme of the show a little bit. Instead of talking about how topics impacted our lives necessarily, we're going to be talking about the positive effects of the topics. We're going to be looking to be an escape from the deluge of negativity that everybody kind of gets hit with daily. There's really just no way to get away from it sometimes. It's not to say we're not going to touch on negative topics or weigh in on, the assholes in power and whatnot, but the majority of your listening time is going to be devoted to mental health and a positive outlook. Mike and I feel like this is really an important thing that everybody else in the world needs, aside from us too. We need it too. If you don't, then good on you, but maybe better look around a little bit more, I guess. All right, so speaking of change,
what's keeping you sane? What's keeping you sane? What's keeping you sane? Hey, what's keeping you sane?
Oh, man. New music. I love it. You're going to be hearing some new music throughout the show, and that is all thanks to producer extraordinaire Mike. He wrote all of this stuff, and it's fantastic. All right, so what's keeping you sane? This week, I will start out with, I watched the Undertaker Last Ride documentary on the WWE Network. I know, if you're tuning back in after a while, you're probably thinking, God damn it, they're talking about wrestling. Can't stand it when they talk about wrestling. This one will be quick, I promise. So they made this, I'm trying to think how many parts it was, six, I believe, a six-part documentary, hour apiece, each episode chronicling the last, I believe it was like four or so years of The Undertaker's career. It could have even been a little bit more than that. I'm not very good with the numbers sometimes. So basically, it went through all these matches, and over the course of it, like, he keeps saying that he's kind of thinking about retiring, and he thinks that this match is going to be the last one, and it ends up never being. It's like that kind of tried and true wrestling story of people not necessarily knowing when to hang up their boots, I guess. So over the course of this documentary, you go through all these matches where he was like, he was going to be the last one and something went wrong and the match wasn't as good as he wanted it to be. He was just kind of, always looking for a reason to come back. And then at the very end, they talk about his final match, which is this kind of theatrical match. And if you listen to our WrestleMania episode this year, you heard us talk about it. It was the Boneyard match. The documentary covers how they went through the process of making the match and everything that went into it. And then at the very end, let's say the last 15 or 20 minutes or so of the documentary, the Undertaker actually retires. He comes to the conclusion that this was the moment, and he retires, which was kind of a surprise, I think, for everybody, including him, because at the beginning of the documentary, he wasn't so keen necessarily on retiring. And then you get to the end of it, you know, six episodes or five episodes later, and he's realized that, yeah, he's gotten the match that he wanted and he's done. And I mean, I believe it like any other thing with wrestling. If, you know, I'll believe they stay retired when I see it. But I honestly hope that this one sticks, because it feels like he got some closure in that Boneyard match, and he's not getting any younger, and I would hate to see something debilitating happen to him, you know, just by not knowing when to stay home. So it was a really good documentary. I enjoyed it a lot. Did you get to see any of it?
I saw clips of it, and what you were saying about him coming to the conclusion that he needed to retire at the end of it is, I think that's an amazing statement for someone like him, or sports stars. You see it all the time, is where they have a job where they get to decide, you know, where they don't want to retire and they end up retiring, you know?
Yeah.
So it's such a positive outlook on their careers. I think we're going to touch on careers later. I'm jealous, you know?
I know. It was fantastic. And I'm saying it as a fan. Like, I don't want to sound hokey, but like, I'm happy for him, I guess. Like, do you get what I mean there? Like,
yeah, I mean,
okay. So, okay. Here was something that I know you had mentioned watching, and we hadn't had a chance to talk about it yet. And I was kind of, I don't want to say avoiding it, but I was sort of avoiding it so that we wouldn't talk about it and then have to rediscuss it on the show. But, the new Netflix Unsolved Mysteries came out, is quite a bit different, I think, than a lot of people were expecting. I don't understand necessarily why they thought it was going to be akin to the 90s version, and I'll explain. It's only six episodes. It's five like missing person murder mystery theme type episodes, and then one alien abduction UFO episode. These are an hour long, and it's only one story per episode. So that was the first big difference that struck me as far as like how the format of the show went. Because it used to be, you know, you would get like two or three kind of quick stories in. I think they were a half an hour. I could be wrong. Maybe they were an hour. They were probably an hour. But they also, like, all right, so they jazzed up the theme a little bit, which I thought made sense. Like, I felt like it needed to be kind of, you know, touched up a little bit. And I thought they did a really good job on the theme song. There was no host, though. No replacement for Robert Stack. There is, however, a picture of him on, like, the intro video, like the little cards that come up. There's like, a quick shot of Robert Stack. So there's a definite nod to, like, where the show came from. But there's no host. None. Which I thought was kind of a surprising choice, but I understood it because they tried to replace Robert Stack in the past and it had gone terribly. Like, it just didn't work. Not to knock Dennis Farina, but he's no Robert Stack. What did you think just as far as the intro and the format of the show went? How did you like it?
I would have liked to have seen it chopped up into bits, you know, instead of devoting the whole episode to one case. I would like to have seen them stick to the original formula a little bit more.
Yeah, that's kind of how I thought about it, too. I was like, well, sure, okay, the stories were interesting. I don't want to say they were boring. The UFO one that one kind of needed to be shorter. That one was a little bit, it drug a little bit for me. And then there was the one episode that was, it was in France. It was like an overseas episode about like a French noble family, and the guy was a murderer. That one, if I say it's because it had subtitles, it made it feel slow to me. I'm going to sound like an ignorant American. I don't dislike subtitles. I guess it's just something about how that episode was laid out for me, but it felt really, really slow.
Yeah, it really was.
And like I said, the UFO one was kind of goofy, but there was definitely some good stories in there. I agree. I would have liked to see them chopped up. on a whole, though, like, I know a lot of people are saying, like, you know, if they give an hour to one show, there's just, you know, that much more they can lay out about the show and more information that they can give. And I totally get that. I guess with this one, I'm kind of wondering, like the TV show, when they had an update, when there was like a big update, they went right to fucking TV about it. And they told you, like, oh, you know, last week we found this because of this story and da 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 da. How are they going to do that with this? Like, you're not going to get your updates. You're either going to get your updates like via the internet, or I don't know. Do you picture them filming like quick update vignettes if it comes up?
I think that's what they'll do. I think they'll stack on a new episode with the updates, because I know they've already mentioned that they've had credible tips phoned in.
Oh, no shit. I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah.
Huh. So, yeah, that was, like I said, it's six episodes, so we burnt through it in, like, 2 days. It might have been three, but I don't think so. And it kind of didn't tide me over, I guess. I hope they come out quick, because I was kind of hoping for more than six episodes. I will say, you can absolutely tell that the people from Stranger Things did it.
Why is that?
Well, that intro felt so much like Stranger Things to me. I don't know. It was just kind of one of those things that struck me. I was like, it's got that kind of synth sounding music, and it felt like a Stranger Things type intro to me. Not in a bad way. I didn't think that they were like dipping the well too many times or anything like that, but it was just one of those things that kind of like, oh, well, okay, I guess they have a style, you know? And then the only thing I had after that was, all right, so last night or the night before, I went to turn my Xbox on, and we were going to we watched Midway last night, the war movie. It was a popcorn movie. That's all I'll say. Like, it wasn't bad. I guess I kind of appreciate war movies in the way that I hope no one ever has to actually experience war again. Like, that would be like the ultimate goal, right? Like, you wouldn't want people to experience war anymore. So my hope is that someday the only experience anyone will have with war will be watching that shit on screen, like in a Hollywood sort of way. Because this was just a straight up popcorn movie, like, you know, the good guys won. And obviously it's based on fucking, you know, real story, but like, it was very, there were points in the movie that I wondered if it was self-aware of itself. Like, if it was like, you know, like nodding to like war movie kind of tropes, and then I just couldn't tell. And I was like, well, who directed it? It's Roland Emmerich. And I'm like, all right. So then it still could be either way. Like, he does all those, like, doesn't he do all those like storm movies? Doesn't he do like big disaster movies? Isn't that his thing?
Yeah, it was Independence Day, and then was it the day after tomorrow?
Yes.
Yeah, that's kind of his earmark of big budget.
Yeah, big budget kind of disaster-y films. This looked great. The action was fun. Although I'm getting sidetracked. That isn't what I was going to talk about. When I went to turn on HBO Go, there was this little like pop-up note that came on that said, now, because of HBO Max, they're getting rid of HBO Go entirely. So they were like, the app that you're using right now is going to be useless in a couple weeks. So they're kind of forcing you to get HBO Max. So yeah, I kind of joked when it came out that they were going to, like, why the fuck would I have to, why do I have to pay for this twice? Basically, like, I already have the service. Why do I need to pay again? But now they kind of put me over a barrel, so to speak, and I don't have any choice. So we downloaded it, got a free trial, and it's a pretty solid little app, man. They got Looney Tunes. I was really happy. Like, I sat around today and watched like old Looney Tunes episodes. Like, I mean, like
it basically has the Warner catalog, right?
Yeah. It doesn't have a ton of stuff. I don't want to say it doesn't have a ton. There's a good amount of movies on there. But I feel like it's like there's more coming, obviously. And they've already got original programs that they're doing. I haven't dipped into really any of that. But like I said, I watched a bunch of Looney Tunes, right? So I'm watching, like, they haven't busted out into seasons. So season one is like two fucking episodes from like 1930 something. Man, are they boring. And it was like, it was like a mouse character. So it was clearly their kind of answer to Mickey Mouse. So I skipped some of the boring ones and I moved forward a little bit, and I'm watching like what they considered like the third and fourth season, which is when you saw more people like Porky Pig, and Daffy Duck pops up every now and then. And all I gotta say is, man, some of those old ass cartoons were really, really dark. Like, there was a dude there to kill Porky Pig's family, and he was like gonna poison them all, and he had them all in like stocks, and he was gonna get them all together, and he was gonna fucking poison them and wipe them out. It was just like wild shit, like mad. There was an episode where Porky gets caught in like a mad scientist thing. And you remember that episode of The Simpsons where Homer goes to hell and they're feeding him the fucking donuts constantly? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's basically what they were doing to Porky. Like, they were just bringing him from like table to table and just stuffing him with like all of this weird random stuff. So I kind of wonder if The Simpsons, maybe like that was a nod to the old Looney Tune thing. I don't know. You know, like, you see something, you wonder if it's kind of meant to be as like an homage to it or whatever.
I think everything in The Simpsons was an homage.
Right? Like, I guess it kind of has to be. At this point, they would have, if they weren't doing homages, they'd have run out of stuff. But, that was it. That was my saying. So, what kept you saying, Mr. Producer Extraordinaire?
Oh, you know, just being alive, I think.
I mean, that's a good place to start. Like,
well, I think I'll try to use my time to shout out a smaller YouTube channel that I follow. And that would be, I think I've mentioned him before on the show, but since it's reboot, we are erasing all canon. So we have a new canon going on.
Good, good.
So Passion of the Nerd is a YouTube channel devoted to basically philosophy and the Whedonverse. So he covers episode guides to Buffy, to Angel, to Firefly.
Huh.
And he kind of ties his episode reviews in with philosophy.
Okay.
So a lot of them hit kind of, you really understand the episodes better, and it really is an emotional kind of roller coaster, because they're like 30-minute long videos.
Right.
You're reliving all those emotions you had watching those episodes the first time.
I'm going to have to give those a... I don't know if I watched the Firefly ones. I'll have to watch that.
Yeah, those are ones that really... Because, you know, so much was done perfect from episode one on.
Right.
That it's a shame that the show didn't continue. But that's for another discussion.
Yeah, that's a whole other episode altogether.
But... Other than that,
oh, podcast world, you want something hot, huh? How about a How We Saw It
hot take?
Uh-oh, we've been interrupted. The hot take music tells me I have to hit you with a hard-hitting topic for you to bring the negativity into our positive podcast.
All right.
And I'm sorry to have to do that.
That's okay.
But... our wonderful Secretary of Education has recently announced that children must return to school. As a parent, what is your take on that?
This is a tough, tough topic. Because I know people that fall on like both sides of the issue on this. I think that some kids did okay with it, and I think some kids didn't, and I think that's because that's just how the nature of people are. Some people can adapt to certain things and some people cannot. So for some children, not being around your normal social structure, because that's what it is, let's be honest, that's what this is for kids. Like, when you went to high school, like, I'm sure you can attest to this too, when you went to school, that's your fucking world. Like, you might hate it, but that's your world for 8 hours a day or whatever it is. So for some kids, like, having that completely taken away from them is just like, you know, like, their brains can't can't compute how that shit works. And distance learning absolutely didn't work for him. I think for other kids, like, you know, like my son, he did better at the distance learning thing. You know, Jen had his work all laid out for him when we, you know, started the day. Like, he knew what he had to do that day. That's not to say he always did it, but like, he knew what he had to do. So his work was getting turned in pretty much on time, because as he would give it to Jen, she would scan it and give it to the teachers. But I'm not so fucking stupid to think that my situation is the same as anybody else's. But I don't agree with saying schools have to be open. No, they don't have to be open. You want them to be open. It would be nice if they were open, provided they could be open safely. And that's the important word that nobody on the, you know, Ms. DeVos or Trump or anybody else seem to be. That's the word everybody keeps skipping over, the fucking safety. Like, they just talk about, you know, like, you know, our children need to be educated and not indoctrinated. They're not being indoctrinated, you fucking boob. They're being kept from, like, you know, like, okay, so a bunch, you know, so kids aren't so susceptible to COVID as adults are, but they can still go and bring those germs home to their parents, who are then, you know, going to bring it to where they work, or, you know, spread it to other people. Like, this is a big fucking deal. Like, if you want to go back to being able to do absolutely nothing again, then by all means, just rush those fucking schools open, excuse me, and see how that goes, because I don't picture it going particularly well. I believe that they need to come up with a solution to the problem that works for everyone involved. I believe they should have some form of distance learning for parents that don't want to have their kids going on a full-time basis, and they need to have it available for kids who do need to go. You have kids with special needs, and you have kids that go to special education classes that have, like, you know, very hands-on forms of education that you can't do in distance learning. And for people in those situations, you know, having your whole routine upset could be completely devastating to a person, and that's not fair either. So they need to come up with a way for people like that to be able to go to school safely, and for people whose, you know, kids whose parents need them to go to school safely, they need to be able to go. But you need to have some kind of rotating schedule, maybe. Like, all right, you're going to be able to go 3 days a week, and 2 days you're going to have to do some distance learning. Like, it's just how it's going to have to be. Because we can't be taking any goddamn, like, risks with this. Like, we managed to fucking flatten that fucking curve out, you know. We managed to crest that hump, and I swear, to me, it just seems like we're, like, just standing on it, ready to fucking dive overboard again, like, right into just a sea of poor decisions. It really concerns me. I don't necessarily know if I personally feel safe sending the boy to school, not yet. Anyway, and stupidly, like, I completely glossed over this. Some areas of the country, schools open up way sooner. So for some of those people, you're saying school has to be open right fucking now in states where COVID is just starting to be on the rise. So how the fuck are they supposed to open school in 3 weeks or four weeks or whatever it is? Like, it's such a bullying tactic. It's a mafia tactic. And it's exactly what this administration does. It's the only thing they do well is bully people or attempt to bully people.
I agree.
I know, like, it's hard. Like, obviously, like, I know for you, like, you don't, like, you have your niece and your nephew, but you don't have kids, so it's a little bit different. Like, you want them to be safe, but you don't have that, like, you know, like, well, not my fucking kid, like, you know.
Right.
Like, there's only so much you can invest in it when you don't have necessarily, like, a somebody kind of with their toe in the fire on it, I guess. But I don't see you saying, like, you know, fuck them kids. Like, I don't picture you saying anything like that. You know, I picture you wanting it to be, like, you know, common sense. Like, what I think what most people would want is that it should be done smartly and safely, so that, you know, grandma and grandpa, you know, survive for another year. I don't know.
Definitely.
All right, so there was your first rebooted hot take. I hope you enjoy the music. Again, made by producer extraordinaire Mike. All right, so do we have music for the Bane topic? I don't think we do, do we?
I gotta come up with something for that. I forgot about it.
All right, so, you know, eventually we'll have lead-in music, but for now, here we go. Main topic. When Mike asked me what I wanted to do for this episode, when we were like, hey, we should probably start doing that podcast thing that we used to do, and again, and get those episodes out there, I came up with an idea for an episode basically called What Did You Want to Be? Like, I feel like it's one of those conversational topics that can be either really, really boring, depending on the person, or really, really interesting. But it's one of those things that I always feel kind of curious to ask people, what did you want to be when you grew up? Because I think it's interesting to see where you're at now and look back, because a lot of times I feel like you got to look back to see where you came from to have a better idea of where it is that you want to go. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, for me, I don't think I was overly different than any other kid. I think every little kid wants to be, you know, like a fireman and an astronaut. I don't think I ever wanted to be an astronaut. I ain't much of a flyer. But I'm going to try and list these out in the best possible, chronological order that I can do. However, the second thing I wanted to be is going to be the last thing I bring up, because it's going to tie into the whole looking back thing. So for anybody, let's see, under the age of 35, you would probably not understand that there used to be this thing on TV where they would advertise for correspondence courses, which is where you would basically send them a self-addressed stamped envelope and probably $20. And you could get a degree in weird stuff. You could get a degree in cosmetology through the mail. And I want to say bail bonds. It was really, really weird stuff. But one of those things that was on there was private investigator. And I was always that's what I want to be. I don't necessarily know why that's what I went for. I didn't watch a lot of Humphrey Bogart film noir type movies, so I didn't have that kind of... But I watched a lot of Looney Tunes, and Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck always did that kind of Sam Spade private eye thing. And I always thought that was kind of interesting. I know you always rib me for this. You always give me shit about wanting to be a private investigator, and for good reason, because I envisioned it as being this. I envisioned it that kind of it was in the in the cartoons, I guess. I thought that if you were a private investigator, you just kind of walked around, a private investigator in any kind of TV show would be. And the reality of it as I got older was private investigators are they're kind of sleaze balls. They're not cool looking, they show you in those old detective movies or anything like that. They're kind of scurvy. They root out people that are dodging insurance claims and horrible shit like that. I realized that I was going to have to spend my life taking pictures of cheating spouses, basically. And that wasn't really what I wanted to do. To put a positive spin, we were trying to put a positive spin on everything. What I deemed to be kind of a fairly negative job. Like, that's really what kind of broke me on it, was that it was just, it didn't seem like it was going to be very fun in any way, shape, or form. But when I was in like my mid late 30s, I wrote a private, like a private eye story, like a short story. And I've actually been entertaining the idea of fleshing it out and doing some kind of podcast film noir drama with it.
Ooh,
yeah. Idea. Yeah.
I like that short story. You never finished the second part.
No, though. I didn't. I think it would be a lot of fun. I think I only got a couple pages into like the follow-up for it. And the problem was, when I wrote the first one, it ended on a cliffhanger, and that was all I had envisioned. Like, I had never envisioned it going past that. It was just going to end on a cliffhanger, kind of like those old serials used to. But obviously you can't do that, because people read the story and they're like, yo, what happens next? And I'm like, oh, like, I don't fucking know. So I did start it, but I never went anywhere with it. But yeah, it feels like to me that if I could figure out how to flesh it out enough, I feel like some kind of podcast serial drama might be a really cool idea for it.
I believe it. I think it would be.
You're going to have to write the music for it.
That would be fun.
Right? As well. It would. All right, so when I got over that, when I'm reading this now, like, obviously it feels like a logical progression. When I got into high school, I wanted to track serial killers for a living. That's what I wanted my job description to be. I'm sure it had a lot to do with watching, I love Silence of the Lambs and shit like that. So it's like, you know, the whole idea of tracking a killer is kind of like, it's exciting to me. Like, I love figuring out puzzles. And to me, like, there's nothing more of a puzzle than a person. Like, people are like, you know, like the best puzzles. But I wanted that to be my only job. Like, I had no interest in actually going out and like, running after someone with a fucking gun. I wanted them to stick me in a room with nothing. I wanted to be that that It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia meme, where he's standing there with the fucking like conspiracy theory papers all over the place, and like he's trying to make a point. That's what I wanted my I know that's what I wanted my job to be. I wanted to sit in a room with nothing but pictures and paper and notes, and I wanted to piece together the case, basically. Like, I wanted to figure out who the person was based on the case. And it's funny, because like, this was the first job that I ever actively pursued. Like, my grades were shit, so I knew I was going to have trouble getting into the FBI just based on that. But I didn't really have any concept of what you needed to do to get into the FBI. I assumed it was just you applied and that was the end of it. So when I was like, let's see, 17, 18, for one of my classes, I had to research a job. And I researched shit with the FBI. I switched jobs midstream in the project, and here's why. I called the local FBI station, or whatever you want to call it, and I explained to the guy that, you know, I gave him my name, what I was calling about, that I what I was interested in doing, what do I need to do to become a member of the FBI so that I can track serial killers. And he said, well, you can either go into the military, which, no, wasn't going to do that, or, and this was my favorite one, you go to college and you major in math and accounting, because that was when I would be going into college to have joined the FBI, that was the kind of crimes that they were investigating more at that point, were like cyber crimes and like accounting crimes and shit like that. And he was really kind of a dick on the phone about the whole thing. Like, he was not at all helpful or friendly to me in any way. And it absolutely took the fucking wind out of my sails. So I just kind of put the kibosh on being a serial killer profiler and tracker and decided to just be kind of a true crime nerd, which I'm sure you could attest, Mike. My true crime library was large.
Kind of concerningly so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I always joke that if they ever raided the house, they would arrest me just based on my library. So luckily they never had to. Yeah, like I said, like I changed careers mid swing on that project, and it was because of, as I phrased it, the dreaded FBI call. And I switched jobs to professional wrestler, which was something that when I know there's no logical jump on that at all. So I believe the reason I started researching the job was because my teacher at the time had told me that no one had ever done it in his class before, that nobody had ever researched professional wrestling before. So I said, fuck it. That's what I'm going to do. I did. And it was fun. And my project really only boiled down to, I got them to bring a TV into the classroom, and for 40 minutes, I had the class watch wrestling matches, basically. And I would give like notes on the matches, and I would like, and beforehand I gave like a little, you know, average pay rate for a wrestler and shit like that. It was, thank God for the internet back then, because how the fuck would I have ever found any of that stuff out? I picked that because, like, obviously because my teacher said that no one had done it before. So I said, well, that sounds like a great idea. But because, like, you know, obviously when I was a kid, I was a huge fan. So while I was researching the job, it kind of rekindled that desire to do that when I got out of school. The problem I've noticed with some of my career choices is that I don't pick things that are necessarily easy to get into. I mean, obviously, with the private investigator, all I had to do was send an envelope, but I don't know if that quite counts. But, you know, to be a profiler, like, that's not, like, you don't just get to be that. You got to, like, work to that. And I wasn't willing to take the steps that I didn't want to take. And pro wrestler was the same thing back then. Now, I feel like it's much easier to find somebody that can train you or find somebody that can kind of get you in the door via social media and things like that. But back then, when I was looking to do it, I didn't know any, I had no idea where to start. So it was always kind of one of those careers that I wanted to do, but I didn't necessarily know how I was going to do it. The closest I ever got was I made friends with somebody via the internet who was a wrestler, who was an independent wrestler down south. And he and I became friends, and he offered to train me. Basically, he was like, you move down here and I'll train you. Like, you know, you can pay me whatever and I'll train you. And I didn't do it. I often kick myself, because it was probably the closest chance I would have ever had to finding somebody that would have been willing to train me. And I didn't do it. I think the idea of just picking up and abandoning my life at that point was just, I'm not quite that bold, or at least I wasn't that bold then.
Yeah, that's kind of, that would have been a very drastic step.
Yeah, like it would have been going from like living in my apartment with like complete, you know, I had everything that I needed at that point, except a will to pay bills. But what was I going to do with my cats at that point? Like I was in a relationship at that point, not a great one, but I was in one. The thought of leaving my parents, not that like, oh, I can't do it without mommy and daddy, but like just the thought of like, what if they needed me and I was like, you know, 7 hours away, how am I going to get to them kind of thing? Yeah, it was just, I don't know. It was just a little too, it was scary. I'll admit it. It was fucking scary. And then, you know, when you say, you know, when you kind of tell yourself no on something like that, you start looking at things through different light. And honestly, I think in the long run, it was a good decision that I didn't fucking do it. I don't know. I'm not the most athletic. Let's be honest. I ain't the most athletic dude. Maybe I could be if I took better care of myself, but I don't have any idea. Like, I could have got in there and just been absolutely fucking terrible at it. I could have gotten hurt. Wrestlers don't have a long track record in terms of like how long they stay alive sometimes. So, who's to say that I wouldn't have, booze and pilled myself to death, you know?
You most definitely would.
I know we're laughing, but I kind of think maybe you're right. Like, I tend to live into a little bit of excess, and if you gave me that kind of freedom without anybody around me to sort of rein me in a little bit or make me like keep me honest about it, that would have been the end of it. I wouldn't be here today. So, and you know, like that being said, with the not being athletic, I do, however, think that on a different timeline, I would have made a really good manager.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That would have been a good role for you.
I sometimes wonder if I had said that from the beginning, instead of wanting to be a wrestler, if I had said I want to be a manager or something along that line, if I'd have had more, balls to kind of jump at it. You know what I mean? Like maybe the thought of not getting fucking beat up on a daily basis would have been a little more appealing to me or something.
Then you could be as angry and opinionated as Jim Cornette.
Right. Hopefully with better opinions on certain things. Cause yeesh. But
you're talking about how a dream like that affects you. I seriously wanted to be a firefighter.
Mm-hmm.
And I did everything in my power. I even moved to Florida because there was a school down there to attend to.
Yeah.
But I'm colorblind. You can't be a paid firefighter if you're colorblind.
No kidding.
So that kind of shot me in the foot. And
yeah. Goodness.
That sent me into a spiral for a long time.
I was just going to ask, like, did that must have just completely derailed you, like, for something that you want to do that bad to get there and have them be like, hey, this thing that you can't fix, that you have no control over, like, that's going to keep you from doing it.
And we can't explain to you why it's affecting and how not being able to see numbers and dots, but being able to tell us every color on a chart, how that's going to affect being in a pitch black, smoked out house, how that's going to, you know, it was the same when I tried to join the army.
Right.
I couldn't become a paratrooper because of the colorblindness.
I mean, so, I guess that must have to have something to do with like how fast the ground is coming up to you, but usually they got gauges and stuff like that, don't they?
Right.
Feel like that was just kind of one of those, like, it feels like one of those things that disqualifies people, and maybe it should have a long time ago, but now not so much. I don't know.
I think wanting to jump out of a plane is probably disqualifying in of itself,
right? Like, if you're like, hey, put me up there and let me jump out, like, they should immediately say, like, what's wrong with this person? You know, I think it's kind of good for people to hear somebody else maybe that had to go through a situation. I'm sure you can't be the only person that's ever had to go through a situation like that. So I'm sure it's a positive thing for people to hear that they're not alone, that they've had things that they wanted to do that something they had no control over kept them from doing. All right. So the final thing that was on my list of what did I want to be is the out of order one. And that is a radio host. Because when I was a kid, I saw The Fog, and Adrian Barbeau has the most amazing fucking job in the entire world, and she lives in that little Antonio Bay. She lives in Antonio Bay, and she has that job at the radio station at the top of that lighthouse, just playing records all damn night and talking to whoever's out there listening. And that, to me, sounded like the coolest damn thing in the world. And then when I got a little older, you probably wouldn't think it necessarily from the kind of movie it was, because it was kind of a Brat Packy type movie. But Pump Up the Volume is about somebody who has an kind of an outlaw radio show. And I watched that movie at like, God, I don't even know how old I was, 11, 12, something like that. And, you know, it kind of blew my mind. Like, I wanted to have that. I wanted to do that. Like, the idea of sitting in a room and talking about whatever and playing music that I wanted to play and letting people listen to it and kind of maybe turning somebody onto a band they'd never heard before, or talking about something somebody'd never fucking heard of before. That to me was really appealing. Like, the idea of being on the radio has always been way more appealing to me than being in on like TV. Like, you know, like a lot of people are like, I want to be on TV. Like, no, I always wanted to be on the radio. Like, I always wanted people to listen to me. I didn't want people to look at me and judge me based on what they saw. I wanted people to just sit back and listen to me and form their own opinion. And it was the kind of job that I knew I was going to have to go to school for it. So it wasn't so much of what am I going to do. But again, it was another one of those jobs where it kind of helped if you knew somebody. And this was another one of those, like, you know, kind of brushes with could have been. I had a friend whose father worked in radio, local radio here. And he told me if I wanted to come in sometime while he was on the air, he would show me how it was done and get me an in. And I never fucking did it. I don't know why. I don't know if I was just too nervous to kind of jump at the opportunity, like afraid of failing. I don't honestly know what the deal was there. Cause it wasn't 7 hours away. It was like a 20-minute car ride. And for whatever reason, I just decided not to kind of bite on that one. And part of it could have been because, at this point, like physical media was starting to go away the tiniest little bit. Like, you were getting your starts of digital media and things like that. And over time, radio has kind of died a little bit. You've got your Sirius and satellite, but you don't have the, you know, I basically watched it kind of go the Broadway theater route, where like it's like, you know, select people are listening to it, but not everybody, you know.
Thank you, iHeartRadio.
Yeah. Oops. So I mean, you see something like that that you really, you know, kind of wanted to invest some time and yourself into, and you see the medium dying like that. Like, it'll definitely deflate wanting to put that much effort into it. However, here's the positive spin that I said I needed to bring onto this. By looking back over the last like couple weeks that I've been thinking about this episode, you know, because we had brought it up in the past, it dawned on me that the shit I'm doing right now, the stuff we're doing here with the podcast, and this whole medium right here, like, this is allowing me to do exactly what I said I wanted to do. Maybe not with the music and playing songs and stuff like that, but being able to talk to people, you know, just my voice and people listening to it, like, this has allowed me to do, you know, kind of what one of my first dream jobs was. And for the longest time, I didn't see it that way. Like, I kind of viewed the fact that I had never done it as a failure. And I viewed myself as a failure because I hadn't done it. I figured I chalked it up as just one more thing that I could have done and didn't bother doing. And then I started looking at the stuff that we've been doing here. Like, you know, Jesus Christ, we put out 100 episodes, didn't we? Like, more than 100.
More,
yeah. Yeah, like, we put out over 100 episodes of this show so far. We just recently took my blog and we turned it into an audio format. So now I've got something that I've been writing and struggling to find an audience for. And because of this new medium that we've been doing, because you, Mike, have given me this chance and this kind of field to play in, you gave me the opportunity to take something that I was struggling to get viewers for and give it to new people, you know, in a new format. So this whole podcast thing for me has been just such a turnaround for me, like over the last couple weeks when it really kind of came to light for me that I'm doing what I wanted to do. Like maybe it doesn't look the way I thought it was going to look. And maybe it's not exactly the same as I thought that it was going to be. And maybe I'm not sitting in a lighthouse in Antonio Bay, and I'm not sitting in a dirty basement bedroom, pump up the volume. But every couple of weeks, I'm going to be able to put my voice out there for people to hear. We're going to be able to put our ideas out there for people to hear. And that, to me, is just, it's great. Like, I feel good about it. Like I feel good about something for the first time in a really long time. Like I feel good about something that I'm doing, that we're doing. So I guess to sum up that last job there, thanks for giving me the shot there, man.
Aw, you're welcome. I hope our new reboot will bring us success.
Yeah.
And we will find our audience and put ourselves out there.
That's all we've been wanting to do, you know. So look, new music. Oh my goodness, more music, outro music. Look, you are gonna have days that you get down on yourself because you don't think you're doing enough or you're not doing the right things, and all I'm gonna say is that don't be so hard on yourself and look back on the things that you wanted to do when you were younger and look at what you're doing now and see how you can make those things happen by today's way of having to do things. Basically, what I'm saying is don't give up on yourself. I hope you enjoy the new format. I certainly enjoy the new format, and we will see you all next time. Mike, say goodnight to everybody.
Good night.
Later, y'all.